The taxi dropped them and their meagre luggage outside the side door of the hangar, and Nicholas paid the driver while Rayanne thrust her hands into the pockets of her anorak and shivered in the cold wind off the Mediterranean. "There's Yanni now," Nicholas pointed to the bulky figure in greasy brown overalls coming down the loading ramp of the Hercules. He saw them and jumped down off the ramp. "Hello, man. I was beginning to give you up," he said as he came shambling across the tarmac. He looked like a rugby player, as he had been in his youth, and the slight limp was from an old playing field injury. "We were late leaving Heathrow. Strike by French air traffic control." "The joys of international travel," Nicholas told him, and then introduced Rayanne. "Come and meet my new secretary," Yanni invited. "She may even give you a cup of coffee." He led them through a wicket in the main hangar door and into the cavernous interior. There was a small office cubicle beside the entrance with a sign over the door saying Afric Air and the company logo of a winged battle axe. Mara, Yanni's new secretary, was a Maltese lady only a few years younger than himself. What she lacked in youth and beauty, she fully made up for across the chest.
"Yanni likes them mature and with plenty of top hamper," Nicholas murmured to Royan from the side of his mouth.
Mara gave them coffee, while Yanni went over his flight plan with Nicholas. "It's a little complicated," he apologized. "As you can imagine, we'll have to do a bit of ducking and diving. Muammar Gaddafi is not wallowing in affection for me at the moment, so I'd rather not overfly any of his territory. We'll be going in through Egypt, but without landing there." He pointed out their flight path on the maps spread over his desk. "Bit of a problem over the Sudan. They're having a little civil war there," he winked at Nicholas. "However, the northern government are not equipped with the most up-to-date radar in the world. A lot of old Russian reject stuff. It's an enormous bit of country, and Fred and I have worked out their blank spots. We'll be keeping well clear of their main military installations."
"What's our flying time?" Nicholas wanted to know.
Yanni pulled a face. "Well, Big Dolly's no sprinter. And as I've just told you, we will not be taking any shortcuts."
"How long?" Nicholas insisted.
"Fred and I have rigged up bunks and a kitchen, so that during the flight you will have all the comforts of home." He lifted his cap and scratched his head before he admitted. 15 hours.
"Has Big Dolly got that sort of endurance?" Nicholas wanted to know.
"Extra tanks. 71,000 kilos of fuel. Even with the load you've given us, we can get there and back without refueling." He was interrupted by the huge hangar doors rolling open and a heavy truck being driven through. "Oh, that'll be Fred and Sapper now."
Yanni swigged the last of his coffee and hugged Mara. She giggled, and her bosom quivered like a snowfield on the point of an avalanche.
The truck parked at the far end of the hangar, where an array of equipment and stores was already neatly stacked, ready for loading. When Fred climbed down from the cab, Yanni introduced him to Royan. He was a younger version of the father, already beginning to spread around the waist, and with an open, bucolic face, more like a Karoo sheep farmer than a commercial pilot.
"That's the last truckload." Sapper came around the front of the truck and shook Nicholas's hand. "All set to begin loading."
"I want to take off before 4 o'clock tomorrow morning. That'll get us into our rendezvous at the optimum time tomorrow evening."
Yanni cut in.
"We have a bit of work to do, if we are going to get some sleep before we leave."
He gestured to the pallets waiting to be loaded.
"I wanted to get some of the local lads to give a hand with the loading, but Sapper wouldn't be out of it."
"Quite right," Nicholas agreed. "The fewer who are in on this, the merrier. Let's get cracking."
The cargo had been pre-packed on the steel pallets, secured with heavy nylon strapping and covered with cargo netting. There were 36 loaded pallets, and the canvas packs containing the parachutes formed an integral part of each load. This huge cargo would require 2 separate flights to ferry it all across to Africa. Rayanne called out the contents of each pallet from the typed manifest, while Nicholas checked it against the actual load. Nicholas and Sapper had worked out the loads carefully to ensure that the items that would be required first were on the initial flight. Only when he was certain that each pallet was complete in every detail did he signal to Fred, who was operating the forklift. Fred ran the arms into the slots of the pallet and lifted it. Then he drove it out of the hangar and up the ramp of the Hercules. In the hold of the enormous aircraft, Yanni and Sapper helped Fred to position each pallet precisely on the rollers and then strap it down securely. The last part of the cargo to go aboard was the small front-end loading tractor. Sapper had found this in a second-hand yard in York, and after testing it exhaustively declared it to be a steal. Now he drove this up the ramp under its own power, and lovingly strapped it down to the rollers. The tractor made up almost a third of the total weight of the entire shipment. But it was the one item that Sapper considered essential if they were to complete the earthworks for the dam in the time that Nicholas had stipulated. He had calculated that it would require a cluster of 5 cargo parachutes to get the heavy tractor back to Earth without damage. Fuel for it would, of course, present a problem, and the bulk of the second cargo would be made up of dieseline in special nylon tanks that could withstand the impact of an airdrop. It was after midnight before the aircraft was loaded with the first shipment. The remaining pallets were still stacked against the hangar, awaiting Big Dolly's return for the second flight. Now they could turn their full attention to the farewell banquet of island specialities that Mara had laid out for them in the tiny Africair office. "Yeah," Yanni assured them, "she's also a good cook," and gave Mara a loving squeeze as she rested her bosom on his shoulder, leaning over him to refill his plate with calamari. "Happy landings," Nicholas gave them the toast in red Chianti. 8 hours between the throttle and the bottle," Yanni apologized as he drank the toast in Coca-Cola. They lay down in their clothes to get a few hours' sleep on the bunks bolted to the bulkhead behind the flight deck, but it seemed to Royan that she was woken only a few minutes later by the quiet voices of the two pilots completing their pre-takeoff checks and the whine of the starters on the huge turboprop engines. As Yanni spoke on the radio to the control tower and Fred taxied out to the holding point, the three passengers climbed out of their bunks and strapped themselves into the folding seats down the side of the main cabin. Big Dolly climbed into the night sky, and the lights of the island dwindled and were swiftly lost behind them. Then there was only the dark sea below and the bright pricking of the stars above. Royan turned her head to smile at Nicholas in the dim overhead lights of the cabin. "Well, Taita, we are back on court for the final set." Her voice was tight with excitement. "One good thing about being forced to sneak about like this is that Pegasus may take a while to find out that we are back in the Abbey Gorge." Nicholas looked complacent. "Let's hope that you are right." Royan held up her right hand and crossed her fingers. "We will have enough to worry about with what Taita has in store for us, without Pegasus muscling in on us again just yet." "They are on their way back to Ethiopia," said Von Schiller with utter certainty. "How can we be certain of that, Herr Von Schiller?" Nahut asked. Von Schiller glared at him. The Egyptian irritated him intensely, and he was beginning to regret having employed him. Nahut had made very little headway in deciphering the meaning of the engravings on the stele that they had taken from the monastery. The actual translation had offered no insurmountable problems. Von Schiller was convinced that he could have done this work himself without Nahut's assistance, given time and the use of his extensive library of reference works. It comprised, for the most part, nonsensical rhymes and extraneous couplets out of place and context. One face of the stele was almost completely covered by columns of letters and figures that bore no relation whatsoever to the text on the other three faces of the column. But although Nahut would not admit it, it was clear that the underlying meaning behind most of this had eluded him. Von Schiller's patience was almost exhausted. He was tired of listening to Nahut's excuses and to promises that were never fulfilled. Everything about him, from his oily, ingratiating tone of voice to his sad eyes in their deep-lined sockets, had begun to annoy him. But especially he had come to detest his exasperating habit of questioning the statements that he, Gotthold von Schiller, made. "General Obaid was able to inform me of the exact flight arrangements when they left Addis Ababa. It was very simple to have my security men at the airport when they arrived in England. Neither Harper nor the woman are the kind of people that are easily overlooked, even in a crowd. My men followed the woman to Cairo.
Excuse me, Herr von Schiller, but why did you not have her taken care of, if you were aware of her movements?
Dummkopf, von Schiller snapped at him.
Because it now seems that she is much more likely to lead me to the tomb than you are.
But, sir, I have done, Nahut protested.
You have done nothing but make up excuses for your own failure. Thanks to you, the Stele is still an enigma,
von Schiller interrupted him contemptuously.
It is very difficult.
Of course it is difficult. This is why I am paying you a great deal of money.
If it were easy, I would have done it myself.
If it is indeed the instruction to find the tomb of Mamos, then the scribe Taita meant it to be difficult.
If I am allowed a little more time, I think I am very near to establishing the key.
You have no more time. Did you not hear what I have just told you? Harper is on his way back to the Abbey Gorge. They flew from Malta last night in a chartered aircraft that was heavily loaded with cargo. My men were not able to establish the nature of that cargo, except that it included some earth-moving equipment, a front-end loading tractor. To me, this can mean only one thing. They have located the tomb, and they are returning to begin excavating it.
You will be able to get rid of them as soon as they reach the monastery,
Nahut relished the thought. Colonel Nogo will...
Why do I have to keep repeating myself?
Von Schiller's voice turned shrill, and he slapped his hand down on the tabletop.
They are now our best chance of finding this tomb of Mamos. The very last thing that I want to happen is that any harm should come to them.
He glared at Nahut.
I am sending you back to Ethiopia immediately. Perhaps you will be of some use to me there.
You are certainly no use here. Nahut looked disgruntled, but he had better sense than to argue again. He sat sullenly as von Schiller went on. You will go to the base camp and place yourself under the command of Helm. You will take your orders from him. Treat them as if they come directly from me. Do you understand?
Yes, Herr von Schiller, Nahut muttered sulkily.
Do not interfere in any way with Harper and the woman. They must not even know that you are at the base camp. The Pegasus geological team will carry on its normal duties.
He paused and smiled bleakly, then went on. It is most fortunate that Helm has actually discovered very promising evidence of large deposits of galena, which, as you may know, is the ore from which lead is obtained. He will continue the exploratory work on these deposits, and if they bear out their promise, they will make the entire operation highly profitable.
What exactly will be my duties? Nahut wanted to know.
You will be playing the waiting game. I want you there ready to take advantage of any progress that Harper makes. However, you are to give him plenty of elbow room. You will not alert him by any overflights with the helicopter or by approaching his camp. No more midnight raids. Every move that you make must be cleared with me before, I repeat, before you take any action.
If I am to operate under these restrictions, how will I know if Harper and the woman have made any progress?
Colonel Nogo already has a reliable man, a spy, in the monastery. He will inform us of every move that Harper makes.
But what about me? What will be my work?
You will evaluate the intelligence that Nogo collects. You are familiar with archaeological methods. You will be able to judge what Harper is trying to achieve, and you will be able to tell what success he is enjoying.
I see, Nahut muttered.
If it were possible, I would have gone back to the Abbey Gorge myself. However, it is not possible. It may take time, months perhaps, before Harper makes any important progress. You know as well as anybody that these things take time.
Howard Carter worked for 10 years at Thebes before he found the tomb of Tutankhamun, Nahut pointed out maliciously.
I hope that it will not take that long, said von Schiller coldly. If it does, it is very unlikely that you will still be involved with the search. As for myself, I have a series of very important negotiations coming up here in Germany, as well as the annual general meeting of the company. These I cannot miss.
You will not be coming back to Ethiopia at all, then? Nahut perked up at the prospect
of escaping from von Schiller's malignant influence.
"I will come as soon as there is something for me there. I will be relying on you to decide when my presence is needed."
"What about the Stele? You will continue to work on the translation," von Schiller forestalled his objections. "You will take a full set of photographs with you to Ethiopia, and you will continue your work while you are there. I shall expect you to report to me by satellite at least once a week on your progress."
"When do you want me to leave?"
"Immediately. Today, if this is possible. Speak to Fräulein Kemper. She will make your travel arrangements."
For the first time during the interview, Nahut looked happy.